All right, you're back in the DFSR, and we're here with our NFL podcast for Friday, September 16th. I am Doug Norrie. That is
James Davis.
And we are going to take the next hour or so and break down the DFS implications for every single game on the Sunday and Monday slate of Week 2 football. If this is your first time with us, we're from DailyFantasySportsRankings.com, DFSR.com for branding purposes, and we're here to help you with make NFL lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings. You can head over to the site. There's still time to grab a free 3-day trial to our projection system powered by Lineup Lab that helps you calculate optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings. You can toggle between all the different slates. You can use our brand new player lab to search by a number of different filters that will help you put together cash and tournament lineups. Again, free for 3 days, $29.95 a month after that, and that also includes our Major League Baseball projections as well, all under one umbrella. You are all set to go. All right.
And recently, by the way, won the bronze medal for our baseball projections over at dailyoverlay.com. The third best experts from their estimation over the season. I assume the other two guys were just lucky and ran hot. And that, you know, we got a little unlucky. So we're amazing. Trust us.
Yeah. And we actually, I think we finished first or second in that for the first week of NFL as well. So we were feeling pretty good. And we also finished in the top, I think like 10%, even maybe a little higher in the DFAC, which is the Daily Fantasy Accuracy Challenge, sponsored by the guys over at Fantasy Pros. That's a bunch of different pros and different outfits that are putting together FanDuel lineups every week. So we finished in the money in that one. So feeling pretty good about what we put together for week one. And we're going to break down what we got looking for week two as well. We're going to go game.
Stop bragging like a dragon. Talk about some football for week two.
You started the brag train, but I'm all for it. All right. First, we're going to go game by game. And we'll talk about, you know, some games are more interesting here than others. We'll spend some more time on some than others. One quick note, the Thursday game was really funny. We kind of spent a bunch of time on the podcast yesterday. Fade Thursday, nothing to see here, fade Thursday. And then Forte goes out. Although Forte was the one guy
we said. We specifically said Forte was the one playable guy from the game, and he was incredible.
Yeah, that's fair. I was about to correct myself. So Forte was the was a player from that game. We didn't really like anyone else, but the game ended up putting up like 68 total points, way out of bounds from what really anyone thought was going to occur. The one, we talked a little bit about this off the air, the one thing to take solace in if you faded the Thursday slate, which I still think is correct, is that people that tended to play a lot of the Thursday tended to just kind of load up on Thursday, which is always incorrect. So even if they got a piece of Forte, they got a piece of a bunch of other losers as well. So nothing to really worry about if you rostered cash games from and didn't have anyone from that game.
It's actually kind of interesting. I think you make a great point, and you kind of glossed over it, and I think it's worth touching on. You said it's always incorrect to load up on those Thursday games. It's interesting because you can almost never say that about any given game because, you know, the potential for separation, or if you load up on it just a little bit more than the other people do, you can get there. This might actually have been an exception to that just because, first of all, the Thursday game in any given week is going to have the highest overall ownership percentage in the contest it's in because it's the only time you can play those guys, and so people do, right? Mm-hmm. And a lot of people will talk themselves into it because, you know, you have the injury situation clarified, and of course they just like to watch their favorite teams on TV or have a cut of the action. But given that everyone's going to be overowned, you're not actually getting any separation from it. And in this game, it was such a low total that it's just the worst of all possible worlds. Now, if you were one of the people who, you know, snuck Greg Salas and Marquise Goodwin in with Matt Forte and didn't touch anyone else, maybe had Eric Decker, then you did a good job and you're feeling great about this weekend. But yeah, otherwise, this was just shark-infested waters. You know, you're just walking into a trap playing this game and stacking it wholeheartedly.
And when you say highest overall ownership percentage, you just mean compared to themselves, right? Like, so like if Forte was 12% owning cash here, if he had been on the main slate, he's like 6%. That's what
Not what I mean. Oh. Well, yes, that's true, but that's not what I mean here. What I mean is that if you go, so say you take the all-day Sunday slate, no individual game will be as targeted as the Thursday game, generally speaking, because it's the only day you can play those guys. It's a standalone game, and you'll just see just totally out of bounds things. Like, you know, just what percentage of Jets should have been played this week? Something close to zero, with Forte being the only exception. And if they were just part of the Sunday slate, no one would have played Brandon Marshall.
Gotcha. No. That's what I thought you said. No. Okay. Clarification done, because that is what I thought you said.
Cool. Same page, buddy.
Same page. Let's start with our first game. We'll start with the 1 o'clock slate first. The first game we have is Chiefs going to Houston. Chiefs coming off a week where they had Spencer Ware ends up being a chalk play. On the other side of the ball, we had a lot of Lamar Miller going in. A couple interesting guys here. What are you seeing from this game? Is anyone standing out to you in terms of the guys we can consider rostering?
Well, Lamar Miller, I mean, we talked about him obviously a lot week one. He went out there and had a huge workload. I think that he's very, very interesting, I mean, for everyone involved. But if your hypothesis that the Texans are going to just grind out their running backs to the same degree they did last season is correct, then he might wind up being a little bit underowned. I mean, he didn't punch any balls in the end zone last week, but he had 32 total touches. Generally speaking, it's really hard not to pay essentially a mid-tier running back price on FanDuel on 32 touches. Like, a lot has to go wrong pretty much. It is a tough matchup with Kansas City, but I do think that, you know, just given the sheer volume for him there, it's going to be a totally fine play in really any format. And it's a situation where there's going to be some week where Lamar Miller gets those 30 touches but breaks one long run and scores a touchdown or two, where he's just the highest scoring running back of the week. Again, it's just really hard not to, because running backs these days generally just don't get 30 touches in a game. And you can't pencil him in for that. But even if you're going to project him at like 22 to 25 touches in this game, he becomes an excellent play. So I like Miller quite a bit.
Yeah, I like him. I don't think I want to run him out in cash games. I'm worried about the pace of this game overall. The implied total is, or the Vegas total is, pretty low, all things considered. So I like the volume for him. KC isn't like a bone crushing defense by any means. Houston is favored here, so yeah, I think he's a consideration. Though I'm not sure I'm going to do it in cash games. What about the wide receiver situation for Houston? Fuller comes off a great game as a rookie. Mm-hmm. He is getting a lot of hype right now, deservedly so. He's good, and he showed it in the first game. Hopkins gets a little less targeted than we thought. Do either of those things? Do you think the truth is somewhere in the middle? Is Fuller just going to be the target guy here now? Like, what is the situation here with the Houston receivers?
Sorry, Will Fuller. This is going to be a quick tangent, and I'm sorry to everyone involved if you're not into this sort of thing. But I just have to point out. So, Will Fuller, I like all these guys, by the way, and I'll get to some more serious analysis in a second. But when you run a bigger website, you get people reaching out to you all the time, essentially trying to pay you to insert links into your articles.
Sure.
And they oftentimes want to write free articles for you for that same reason. And actually, you know, we're happy to reciprocate content with real sites. But for us, like, we're, you know, honest people. We don't want to just have terrible articles on our site for a few $100 or whatever. But this one article someone sent along was just like the worst article I had ever read. I actually, normally I just bury these in the dustbin, but this one was so terrible that I forwarded it to you, and we had a good laugh at it. And their big thing is this player of week for Texans. It says, it is a known fact that BRB, whatever that means, is where Texans fans are all concentrated. It is therefore only obvious that you will have a Houston player on your fantasy roster. Keeping in mind the opposition, I'll be coming out with the best name for Texans starter, right? So it goes on. It's just awful. Their big sleeper of the week was Will Fuller. Will Fuller need to be watched, though it could be early to start rookie, right? So just like this person, probably from, you know, some non-USA place, was Googling around, found Will Fuller, really liked what they saw, and then we missed out on it.
Oh, that was before week one? Oh, shoot.
Yeah. I'm not going to make the same mistake twice, Doug. I really like Fuller for week two. And I mean, it is kind of interesting. So back to the serious analysis part. DeAndre Hopkins was a guy that we were super high on going into the season. And I still have, you know, some enthusiasm for Hopkins, but he's really dropped out of that Antonio Brown and Julio Jones group for me, and to a lesser degree, Odell Beckham. And for two primary reasons. So the first is that Hopkins doesn't convert targets on the same way that those top end guys do. 111 receptions last season on 192 targets means that he's a lot closer to like a guy like T.Y. Hilton in terms of converting receptions to, or converting targets into receptions, than he is to a guy like Antonio Brown. And obviously it's incredible upside and really dangerous downfield threat, great receiver, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But when you're paying wide receiver one prices, especially in cash games, oftentimes you want more safety. And the other big ding against him for me is a new quarterback situation. I mean, we've seen countless times where a wide receiver is as much of a factor of how often the coaching staff and the quarterback want to look his way than anything else. I mean, these guys are all fast. They can all catch. They can all jump. You know, like, they're all good athletes. Will Fuller, a legit prospect out of Notre Dame and fantastic in week one with a new quarterback, like, that just might be where Oswald is comfortable right now. So I love Fuller for this week. I think, you know, people are up on him now, unlike our fake SEO guy who sent us the email last week. he'll still be pretty underowned, I would think, compared to this upside. And certainly if he's going to move into high single digits, low double digits targets, he might just be a $7,500 receiver by the end of the season. So I like him quite a bit, and I'm nervous about Hopkins.
Well, where he really comes into play is over on DraftKings, where he's only 4,200. So he's in a range, he's in a salary range with a couple other guys that we're going to mention later, and maybe we can talk no halftime challenge after we've mentioned a couple of these other guys. But because I don't want to bury the lead with who some of those other guys are, but 4,200, I actually think he's really not going to go too under the radar there. That's just so cheap. 11 targets last game is just a very real thing, like you said. So I think you could see him, maybe not chalk because there are a couple other interesting guys in this price range, but I could see him being a pretty highly owned player on DraftKings, mm-hmm. especially. Not as much on FanDuel, where you have a bunch of other, for at least cash game purposes, legitimate tested wide receivers in that range that I don't think you need to take the risk.
Exactly. And that's actually why I like him in big tournaments on FanDuel, because I think a lot of people will get down to it. They'll look at those names and say, why bother? You know, so.
All right. Anyone else from the Chiefs? What about the Chiefs side of the ball?
Well, the Chiefs are a tricky one. We've talked about Spencer Ware before. We'll talk about him again, I'm sure, before the season's over. But, you know, Ware missed practice on Wednesday. The quote is that he'll be okay for this week. He and Charkendrick West actually had essentially the same number of snaps. I mean, the fact that Ware only had 34 snaps in this last game, managed 18 touches for 200 yards and a score, is pretty troubling. It'd be very hard for him to replicate that sort of performance. I think he's just too expensive flat out on FanDuel, and I won't personally be playing him. It seems like a classic stay away. Definitely better options for cash games, and you're probably not getting the separation you want for a price point like that on draft or for big tournaments rather. So yeah, I'm not going to bother there. And just, I don't think anyone else on the team is frankly very exciting.
My great hope here is that people that were maybe just reading, you know, analysis going in and not really using any systems to inform their decisions, they played Spencer Ware last week and it worked out for them, and that they just go back to the well again this week because they're like, they subscribe to the idea of, oh, this guy always performs for me. I love that. That's like one of my favorite dumb things that people say, is like the for me angle of it. Like when I do something is when the person decides to perform or not. So I really just hope that people talk themselves into saying, oh, this guy's a stud. He did great for me last week. I'm going to go back to it again this week. And that's the case for me to just totally stay away. So
yeah, 100%. And I think, that's exactly where people's psychology will be this week. And at some point, that bubble is going to burst unless the usage changes dramatically. But especially with some brief injury concerns this week, I don't know why anyone would think he would get more snaps this week. So I could see the touches being down and him being a big disappointment.
The next game up is the Patriots and the Dolphins. Patriots coming off a very surprising, I would just call it an upset. I was going to call it a surprising win, but just a huge upset where they go to Arizona last week Sunday night and take out the win without Brady and without Gronk. Now they head back home facing Miami. Miami coming off a week where they just really couldn't do anything against Seattle. Patriots are a pretty big favorite here, -6.5 with a really low with a really low over under. So I think Miami has the lowest implied total of the day at 18.5 or 18, somewhere around there. What are we liking from the Patriots side of the ball first? A couple interesting guys here, I think, though. The Patriots still remain to me a little bit of a question mark.
Yeah, well, I think the guy I'm looking at primarily from the Patriots, and you and I had some internal debate about what to do about his usage for week one, is LeGarrette Blount. I think Blount, you know, first and foremost, a DraftKings, he's 4,000, so he's probably quite a bit of a better play there. I do think, though, that you can consider the guy. I mean, again, in a positive game script for him, 22 carries, and, you know, the Patriots have this reputation of, you know, mixing it up and bringing in different running backs and surprising everyone. But theoretically, they're just trying to travel forward in time to when Brady's back, from my perspective. So given that, I think they're pretty dialed in on this more conservative game plan. And Blount seems to be the guy that slots in for that for them. You know, the trusted known commodity. I mean, 22 carries against a known defense or a good defense in Arizona. I think that he could come out and have a really, really nice game here. And a 4,000 on DraftKings, that's such a low price for a clear running back one to me that really a strong consider, and I wouldn't be surprised even if he were chalk for week one. Although I will say that he might be a little bit underowned just because people are looking at the yards per carry, or maybe they didn't see the big overall line. Maybe they'll stay away. But yeah, I'm very intrigued by Blount.
Yeah, I just always get worried with how the Patriots script games, because they are a team that will just play. They'll it appears to be that they will take whatever they think they have an advantage over and just use that to death in their game script. So it seemed like that was what they thought they had with Blunt against Arizona. It's just not clear to me. Like, so they're not like some of these other traditional teams. Like, for instance, going back to Houston, I don't think Houston is doing the same thing. They're just like, this is our plan. Hand Lamar Miller the ball, right? Like, this is just going to be what we're going to do.
What evidence do you have that that's not the Patriots' plan?
I don't have any evidence of that. I guess I'm using...
Blunt's good to know.
Well, I guess I'm just using what I feel like is maybe the historical sense of what they've done in the past, which is to not necessarily have like sort of that workhorse guy that they have swapped around the way they use their different players depending on what the matchup is. I just get worried that it would be really hard for me to pencil Blunt in exactly for just as many carries as he had against Arizona. That's all I'm saying. Like, I just don't think he is safe to hit that target just because I just don't think the Patriots roll like that.
Yeah, I mean, I get that, and I know that that's sort of the public perception. I think some of that is a little bit overblown, so I'll give you some carries totals during a 8-game stretch last season. So these are Blunt's carries totals. 18, 13, not great. 16, 3. So you don't like the 3. That was the famous game where they just didn't run the ball at all for the whole game against the Jets, where they just sort of crushed them on national television. And then 17, 29, 19, 16. So I think that, you know, maybe the case for the Patriots always mix it up is a little bit overblown. Like, that's not dissimilar to, I don't know, Lamar Miller last season on the Dolphins. And given that, again, that this season, it just feels a little different to me. Like, they're not fooling anyone. They're not trying to be flashy. They're in the trenches. They don't have their quarterback one. Blunt is clearly the safest option on that team out of the backfield. Doesn't catch a lot of balls out of the backfield, but without Brady there, they're not defaulting to the pass is the new running game thing anymore. So I don't know. I think we can disagree on his safety. I think on FanDuel, clear stay away in the $6,000 price range for cash games, though I could see the upside coming through there. On DraftKings, I think it's going to be really hard to get away from him for me. I don't know.
We have him for, by the way, we have just looked in our system real quick. We have him for 18 carries. So I guess we're right in line with maybe the sort of the game log that you just ran down. I feel comfortable with that number, 18 carries and 2 targets.
Yep,
so, and he's just showing up, you know, he's showing up as good and not, he's showing up as good, but not every lineup kind of guy. What about the wide?
Yeah, no, you make a good point. And I think too about that, you touched on this with the targets. The other guys that are showing up on DraftKings, the fact that DraftKings is a full point per reception format does hurt Blunt a lot. They don't use him in the passing game. And the other kind of punt guys that we'll get to for their certain games, but like Yeldon, Woodhead, a lot of those guys just do catch a ton of balls out of the backfield. So if he's going to start the game down 5 points to Danny Woodhead, based on just receptions alone, he's probably a dog to catch him. So yeah, maybe I overstated the case for him as a cash game guy, but I still really like him as a big tournament play.
What about any of the receivers here? Still have Garoppolo throwing to them. There was a couple. Edelman had some targets last week. They didn't really hone in on any one guy. Can you get in on any of the receivers from New England here?
Not really. Not outside anything other than a big tournament format for me. I just don't know why you're going to bother. Like, why do you want to play a wide receiver for not that cheap that Jimmy Garoppolo is throwing to until we see something from him? So no, not really. I mean, how about you?
No, this is just kind of, and especially if Gronk may or may not play, I'm not sure. So I think I read something that
said Martellus Bennett, big disappointment from week one, even if Gronk is out. So I don't know. The Patriots are kind of going to be unexciting until Brady comes back. Much more interesting is going to be when Brady comes back. I mean, I think public consciousness will be aware of the fact that guys like Edelman's stock will go up pretty dramatically. But as of now, like, no one's really impressing in that wide receiver 2 slot. You know, Edelman is kind of the safe underneath guy, and he's not really doing anything. So I don't know. I'm just not over the moon here.
From a defensive and special teams, our system loves the Patriots this week. It makes sense because they're huge favorites. Miami is not supposed to put up really any points against this defense. You know, the Patriots looked good against what I would call a very good offense in the Cardinals that have a decent amount of weapons, and the Patriots came in there and pretty much shut them down. They're a huge favorite. The Dolphins have the lowest implied total of the day, kind of by far, and I think by like 20% to the next team.
Yeah.
When you're looking to project defensive and special teams, you know, these are tricky things because it's really hard to, I think, to project, well, one, defensive touchdowns. Frankly, you can kind of just throw the book out on that, I think, for the most part.
No, I don't think so. I think defensive touchdowns are one of those things that are, they're highly erratic, but there are definitely correlative factors that you can look at, like, you know, primarily how the interplay between how often a guy gets sacked and how often the other team sacks the opposing quarterback. Because there are some teams that just don't take sacks, you know. And then likewise, obviously, interceptions are another big one. You know, those are kind of the high impact defensive touchdown related plays. I think that, you know, stuff like really having a dynamic special teams guy who can run kicks back for touchdowns, there's definitely some skill there. But generally speaking, for big tournaments, really worrying about that too much is probably time not well spent.
Well, good news is Miami, and this is one thing, another reason that our system is drawing out the Patriots too. Miami got sacked a ton last year, and they just haven't done
five times in week one.
Yep. Right, they just haven't done anything to improve there. So we like the Patriots for maybe some sacks, for keeping the point total low, and I think that's a fine way to go on defense this week. You're not paying upper level prices for them. They're sort of in that middle tier. I mean, we just spent a bunch of time trashing the Dolphins. Is there anyone that you can even consider on the Dolphins here, or are we just going to move on?
No, it looks like they're doing the same thing they did with Miller last year with Arian Foster, and that they're not going to look at him very much. Jarvis Landry is the guy you can keep an eye on. He's pretty cheap on FanDuel for a wide receiver who's the clear number one option on his team. If you think Miami's playing from behind, maybe he has a big game, but not a cash game guy.
All right, moving into the Ravens and the Browns. The Ravens come in as the healthy favorite going into Cleveland, which I find a little bit interesting. That line started at -4.5 for Baltimore, now up to -5.5. And the Browns go through a quarterback change with RG3 no longer there now, going back to Josh McCown. This game is not one that I'll be personally watching unless I'm forced to, but that isn't to say that there aren't some plays that we might be able to mine out of it. On the Baltimore side, what are you seeing from here from a team that's favored?
Oh, I mean, what am I seeing here? Not a whole lot, I guess, is what I'm seeing here. They can be as favored as they want to be and be pretty unexciting from a fantasy perspective. A guy that's on my radar a little bit is Steve Smith. He did lead the team in targets in week one. Curiously, was not a downfield guy at all for them. You know, the five receptions for just 19 receiving yards, that doesn't really fit his player profile. So I could see, you know, in a game where the Ravens are a little looser against a much worse opponent, where he goes off or something. But, you know, Forsett hardly touched the ball, even in that running back one role. Flack, I mean, you can't play any of these guys. This might be the worst fantasy game on the slate.
All right, well, over to the Browns. I'm with you. You just can't hone in on anybody here, really, to any degree.
They shouldn't do anything, right? I mean, right. What did the Ravens do in week one? Nothing. They stunk. So.
And that was against a team that just allowed – that was against Buffalo, who just allowed like 37 right. points to the Jets. So this is why you can't ever judge really – some things off of just 1 week's worth of performance, because you're like, well, what's the truth here? Because is it the Baltimore stinks? Do the Buffalo stink? Do they all stink?
Who knows? The Jets coming up and coming? No, the Ravens scored 13 points against that team, and it was random dudes who you wouldn't even play in a fantasy. I take it back. Mike Wallace did have the big thing. He's not coming in our system because he only had the 6 targets, but, you know, 91 yards and 1 touchdown, a 66-yard touchdown pass. If you think you can count on that, God bless you. Maybe he's a big tournament play, but generally speaking, 3 receptions for 91 yards is not the kind of guy you want to plug into your lineup. So I will not be doing that this week.
On the other side of the ball, the one thing that I find a little interesting is that with McCown coming back, McCown actually was a pretty accurate passer last year. He's not a very good quarterback, all things considered, but he's accurate. Like, he's not RG3, who, look, I mean, the Browns look so terrible against the Eagles last week. And so Barnage gets 2 targets for 0.0 points, but this is a guy. Barnage is a guy who McCown clearly targeted a ton last year, targeted him a lot in the end of the red zone especially. Do you think we see the Barnage kind of get back on track with McCown back under center? Is it something you can consider safe at this point, or are we kind of still taking a wait-and-see approach with the Browns?
Well, I definitely don't think I'm going to play him on FanDuel because he's just not that cheap, frankly, but I think it's a little bit more interesting on DraftKings, and especially like in the flex role, and especially in big tournaments. I mean, Barnage was phenomenal last season. Like, a lot of people, you know, it's very easy to forget after a guy puts up a goose egg after a week. The tight end position is super, super bad, and he was a guy, like, you know, just was a top guy in terms of receptions, targets, including wide receivers. So I think that with McCown coming back, very intriguing. I mean, he's just 4,000 on DraftKings. And, I mean, unfortunately, there's another really good cheap tight end around that same range in Jason Witten. Otherwise, I think it would be kind of a slam dunk. But given that he was a possession guy, a high volume guy last season on 4,000, that might be his cheapest price going forward. I'm going to go ahead and say it will be his cheapest price for the rest of the season. So it's just a question of whether it's enough value to supersede a guy like Witten, who, you know, was the second most targeted receiver in all of football last week. So, he's still very, very strong consideration for me. And it wouldn't surprise me if he was the top overall scoring tight end this week.
After that, there's kind of nothing else to see here for the Browns. The Browns are still a bad team. McCown doesn't really change anything else about any of the other players as far as I'm concerned. I mean, again, it helps some of the wide receivers some because he's just a more accurate thrower. But there was also a reason that the Browns went with Griffin over him to begin with. I'm not saying the Browns are like a smart team, but I don't know.
That was just mostly fantasies about what he could be in the high draft pick. I don't think they weren't going to bring RG3 in and have him lose the starting job to McCown for week one.
Doesn't seem
in my
like
opinion.
It. Well, he has it now. Going on to the next game, we have the Bengals and the Steelers. Steelers put up a fantasy show against the Redskins last week on Monday night that took all of our lineups from sort of question marks to cashing between D'Angelo Williams and Antonio Brown. The Steelers, again, are favorites. Not as high of an overall total as we had going into Washington, but still pretty high up there. The 48.5 over-under with the Bengals. Are the Steelers still the same? I mean, we saw D'Angelo and Antonio Brown last week as just about as safe as it got, although I mean, I guess we're a little close with Brown and Julio Jones going in, so maybe I don't want to be results oriented in what I was thinking going in. But D'Angelo definitely was a guy where he was like an every lineup guy for us. Is it the same case with him this week with just the way the Steelers use him? The price hasn't moved much, but are we going back down the Brown and D'Angelo well?
I think so. I mean, D'Angelo Williams, we've now talked about him probably in every podcast since the beginning of the season, but I think he's a lock for probably the highest volume running back going forward until Le'Veon Bell gets back. The Steelers have just now shown that they're more than happy to trot him out there for 25 to 32 touches in a game. He's been very effective out of the backfield catching the ball, so he's an all three down back. They're effective in the running game too, and in a game where they're favored, there's no reason to think he just won't continue to pound the ball that way. The Steelers have also lost a lot of their other kind of safer outlets, like Heath Miller's not there. We'll touch on Jesse James in a second, but I think that, yeah, he's arguably the safest running back, and it might not even be close. Now, I don't know if it'll work out that you're going to actually play him this week because there's some other good value at the running back position, which we'll get through as we go through the rest of the slate here, but no, a tremendous play. As for Antonio Brown, the fact that he was able to be terrific against Josh Norman and company, I know some other guys covered him in that game as well, just shows that he's still the reigning champ, the belt holder for most safe wide receiver. I don't see him losing that anytime in the remotely near future, so he's an easy jam home in any format for me, frankly. Just the fact that people will try to get away from him for big tournaments means that he might be under-owned there too, although, you know, obviously he'll be more of a chalk play, so I could see getting away from him for GPPs, but yeah, love both of the guys.
Yeah, no, I'm with you too. You mentioned Jesse James. He's a guy that shows up pretty cheap. He comes pretty close into be for us optimal lineups just because the price is so very low at only 4,500 in FanDuel. Roethlisberger did look his way a little bit last game. I get a little worried about these auxiliary guys for the Steelers because they do have a couple of just guys like this in sort of like possession-y guys, and it's just not guaranteed to me that he will see the sort of – I mean, he had 5 receptions for 31 yards. That's just kind of really nothing to write home about. It's also not clear that he is going to be any kind of a red zone threat for them because they just have – they're pretty set in stone on what they do in the red zone, which is go to Williams and go to Brown. So it's hard for me to think that he would just end up sort of jumping – like at best, what is he, the third in line for red zone targets? That's at very best. And so that's like, I think Jesse James is a guy people will talk themselves into this week because he's cheap and because there are just a lot of high salary guys that you really want to have in your lineups and it feels weird to not have them. So I think that he ends up becoming sort of a more popular play simply on the price alone. What about the Bengals side of the ball?
Well, I want to touch on James too, because I think it's not just the price for him. He was on the field for 68 snaps last week, which was more than Antonio Brown. So I think people are looking there and they're seeing the Steelers putting a lot of confidence in him. They like him as a blocker. They like him as a pass catcher. So he probably does, frankly, have nowhere to go but up. That being said, it's just not – I don't know what up really looks like when you're competing for – touches with Antonio Brown and D'Angelo Williams, but it wouldn't surprise me to see him, you know, round out into a 7 or 8 targeted game guy and be, you know, $1,000 more expensive on FanDuel. I'm just not sure that really moves the needle on him if he's going to average 6 yards a catch.
AJ Green had a huge week one, one of the better wide receivers games of the day, maybe the best one, but is he in play here against, he goes 12 for 180 and a touchdown. Is he in play here where it maybe appears as if the Bengals don't have like that Mohamed Sanu second wide receiver option? They don't have Eifert. So Dalton doesn't have the same kind of weapons that he had last year, at least in the receiving game. Do you see the Bengals continuing to just kind of target him as much as possible? And could you see playing him over a guy like Brown or over a guy like Beckham Jr., who we'll get to in a second? What are your thoughts on Green?
Well, I don't think you're going to play him over any of the guys you mentioned before. Yeah, I mean, there's obviously a lot to really, really like about that week one performance. I mean, the first is simply that he was the most targeted of the big name wide receivers. Now, Brown is going to catch and surpass him just on the back of not having one of his worst matchups of the season this week. But still, 13 targets is terrific. Green is a guy who does convert, a lot of the yards per catch and is a really, really strong downfield target. Huge upside, obviously, for touchdowns on a week-to-week basis, particularly with Dalton's favorite red zone target and Eifert out of the picture. And he also got really lucky in week one. I mean, converting 13 targets into 12 receptions is very unusual, even in fantastic matchups. You can't count on him for that level of receptions against the Steelers here. Although, he might not need it on 13 targets. Still, I'm a little lukewarm. I just don't think there's any reason to pay up for, and even in big tournaments, frankly, he'll probably be overowned on the back of the strong week one performance. So he's not really a guy I'm super honed in on, although I like him fine. I think he's, re-entering that discussion among the top receivers in the league.
Yeah, the conversion percentage is what I'm looking at, and it's just not sustainable. So if you think
he's the same price, you're not getting away with anything. Like, it'd be one thing if he was 8,200 and he was your sneaky off the radar guy because he had those 13 targets and only converted six of them, say, and didn't get in the end zone. But that wasn't the case. He's too expensive, and you can just do better.
All right, let's move on to the next game. We have the Cowboys and the Redskins. So aforementioned Redskins go and kind of lose by a lot to the Steelers. The Cowboys come out last week. They manage the game against the Giants. Dak, doesn't really do much in the way of fantasy performance, even though he was a heavy start across the board. We mentioned Witten before as being a pretty highly targeted guy. Where are you looking sort of in this game between the Cowboys and the Redskins?
Well, over on the Redskins side, I don't know that. I mean, do you see any playable guys from the Redskins?
No,
I guess Jordan Reed is a consider, but I don't really see anything that I like here at all.
The reason being is that the Cowboys showed you last week what their plan is here, and their plan is to play real slow and to just control the ball as much as possible. They dominated time and possession against the Giants. That seems to me like that should be their game plan going forward, just as they get Dak sort of like warmed into the system. He's a pretty accurate passer, so that actually fits his mold pretty well. And they have a great offensive line with a good running game. Like, Elliott looked fine. So between those elements, I just don't see why they would go any other direction unless it's like to appease Dez or something, which, I mean, stranger things have happened with that guy because everything seems like a little off kilter when you start getting that guy upset. So the only way I could see things going a little differently with them playing faster is that, but that's mostly the case for me against all the Redskin guys. I just don't think they're going to touch the ball enough.
Yeah, and I mean, last week we saw a few troubling signs, even if you can count on a more positive game script for them this week. So first of all, Matt Jones and Chris Thompson essentially split carries. Now that could be because they were just behind so far and they were just kind of giving up and didn't want to risk Matt Jones further. But he's obviously not a play if you think it's going to be a slow matchup. And then you have these receivers. I mean, Jordan Reed, I like Jordan Reed. He's a phenomenal player and one of the best tight ends, but you're not going to pay $7,400 for him on FanDuel, right? I mean, when you can get, let's see, like Kelvin Benjamin or just, more trustworthy wide receivers at the same price point. And when you compare him to the cheaper guys, like you can get like Witten, say, or Gary Barnage around these $5,900 to $6,000 price points, you simultaneously get better guys at the higher price point at wide receiver, and you get better tight ends at lower price points than you do wide receivers in the same price range. So
right.
He's just not a guy I'm going to ever consider. I probably won't wind up playing him all season really in any format unless something dramatic changes. So the Redskins, I mean, again, every team has a few wide receivers you can consider for big tournaments. The Redskins have their version in DeSean Jackson, who can put up a huge total if he catches a few long balls. Even like Jamison Crowder was highly targeted last week with 10 targets and 6 catches. So, yeah, it's not like there's no guys you can consider in any format for the Redskins, but it's not a team I'm excited about.
You mentioned Witten on the side of the ball. Witten's a guy our system's really high on coming off that huge target game. Is that something you think is sustainable? I mean, people have jumped in the chat and they don't like to see the name Witten. I'm not really exactly sure why. It could be an anti-Cowboys thing. Could be an age thing. It's just I've seen some like Witten backlash here. Witten comes in as, I think, one of the highest tight ends we just have overall. Do you think it's sustainable that he continues to see this kind of volume on a game-to-game basis, or do you think that you see Dak start to spread the ball out a little bit more?
Well, there's a chance he spreads the ball out a little bit more, but it's not like we have Witten projected for the 14 targets he got last week. We have him projected for 8.5 targets, and he's still showing up. And that's because even 8.5 targets should be among the league leaders in terms of projected targets for any tight end this week, right? I mean, the thing is, like, 14 targets in a given week, I think most people just don't understand what that means. Like, that means that you were your team's first read, and they just want to throw you the ball. Like, basically, no one will average 14 targets over the course of this season. So given that the number is there and he converted a good percentage of them and he has a rookie quarterback who, you know, the Cowboys clearly don't trust to just unleash just yet, to me means that, you know, unless the Redskins game plan specifically to shut him down, which, again, why would they? It's not like he blew the world on fire last week. I think he'll just be a good play. I think he's definitely going to be a red zone target. Should the Cowboys be blessed enough to get down there with this grindingly, seemingly slow churning offense? The volume is really, I mean, especially on DraftKings, like to get a tight end who caught 9 balls last week for 4,300, it's just really hard for that to be what kills you, right? I mean, yeah, there's a chance where he doesn't go off and score 15 or 18 points. But he doesn't need to. I mean, even if he catches 6 balls, he's essentially paid for himself already.
So. And the aforementioned Jesse James last week caught 5 balls against this same exact team. So,
He caught 5 balls on a team where he's competing with Pro Bowl-level players, or at least a Pro Bowl-level system, and what they've turned out between Bell and Williams. And so, given that Witten was able to do that, you know, and now he's coming in a situation far better than James, you would think, in terms of just lion's share of targets for his team. Yeah, he's a great play to me. And I don't know, sometimes I think that people's opinions are influenced just by consensus, you know, and when they look around the industry and don't see a lot of people being on the same guy, it makes them feel funny. They don't want to take a guy that other people don't take. But if you're just playing the guys that everyone writes about in all their picks articles, then you're just paying the rake. You're doing what every single person's going to do, and you've got to make a stand somewhere. And for me, Witten's a very easy spot to make that stand.
Yeah, just as a note too, the Redskins last year ranked 21st in the league in DVOA against the tight end position. So that's adjusted for opponent and everything else. So just a below average team. They showed that it's probably still the case with them, even with some of the defensive upgrades they've gotten in the secondary. I love Witten. I think he's going to be sort of contrarian coming through our system, and I'm totally fine with it just on the implied safety. Let's go.
Yeah, I like that. Okay. Side note quickly about tight ends. I ran a correlation on this going into last season. Teams that are good against the tight end from year to year, there's not always that strong a correlation just because, you know, it's so personal. There's a lot of turnover at the linebacker position, and a lot of times it's very matchup dependent just because tight ends are so erratic. So, like, if you happen to face Gronkowski twice in a given season or whatever, like, you know, or you ran bad and caught, you know, Jordan Reed's huge game or whatever, like, things can get really, really crazy. And that being said, it's still a great play. I just want to make that point because I think sometimes the DVP is weakest in the tight end position in my mind.
The next game on the list is the Lions versus the Titans. Lions, again, are a nice favorite here. -6 going at home against Tennessee. A couple interesting things come out of the Lions camp from the first week. Marvin Jones, who, you know, had a ton of preseason hype going in, actually in the volume department lives up to it, but not in the conversion department. He, I think it was like 5 for 12 or something like that. Where do you
4 for 10?
4 for 10. So where do you see Marvin Jones fitting into things this week on with the Lions? Sort of, I would call them heavily favored, 26.5 implied total number so far.
Yeah, no, I think that it's a very curious situation to me. So there's a little bit more to suss out with this Marvin Jones Golden Tate thing. The most interesting thing to me was that Jones outsnapped Tate. Like, he was on the field for 6 more plays than Golden Tate was, which is an indicator that a lot of that preseason hype about how much they love him is real. The thing is, though, like, Stafford already is not a super, super accurate passer, and converting 4 receptions from 10 targets, that's the type of thing that teams can get sick of after a while. I mean, that's such a terrible low rate. You know, it's a figure I've cited several times on the podcast in the past, but like, the top 40 wide receivers last season converted 63% of their targets into receptions. So when you're coming in at a full, like, you know, 23 raw points or 50 percentage points lower, that's bad. Now, it's a one-week sample. You can't rely on it too much. And Jones obviously did convert a high yards per catch on those. And I could see that continuing to be the case going forward. The problem is that it's not going to feel especially safe on a week-to-week basis, particularly in PPR formats where you get points just from catching the ball. So I do like Jones, and I could see playing him this week, and I probably will wind up playing him this week, but it's not the slam dunk it would feel like if he had converted those 10 targets into like 6 receptions for me. And I know that seems small and kind of nitpicky, but that's just kind of – that's where my gut tells me right there.
So just as worth noting, Stafford last week had an 80% completion rate for the day. Almost all of the non-completions were to Jones, so he completed 31 of 39. And I think you said Jones had accounted for 7 of those drops.
Six of those misses. Yeah. So well, it's not, they're not all drops, though, right? And it depends on how they use Jones. Like Tate has always been a guy they've been happy to use underneath, so he's naturally going to have a higher conversion rate. And, you know, with the Lions being favored here, which, you know, who knows how usual a situation that will be for them going through the season, probably not super likely. That leads me to believe that there will be fewer downfield options for Jones, and they're going to feel less like they need to force the issue. So there's definitely some factors here that are making me less than enthusiastic about playing Jones this week. He's still super cheap on DraftKings, so I don't think it really winds up changing your lineup decisions there very much. I mean, $5,500 for a guy who might just be the wide receiver one on his team is very affordable, so I definitely don't hate him over there. I am a little bit more concerned on FanDuel, though.
Yeah, it's funny. I don't even mind the FanDuel price either. $6,500 is in that lower middle tier of guys, and he is probably coming off of week one. Without looking too quickly or too deeply at it right now while we're talking, I suspect he was the most highly targeted guy among that group of receivers, or it'd be. And if not, he was in the top one or two. So
this is easy to pull up, I think. Yeah, I mean, DeSean Jackson had the same number of targets as him last week. Otherwise, you're like John Brown. No, Jarvis Landry was down. Stephon Diggs was up there, but, you know, bad team, bad thing. Steve Smith, a lot of the guys in this category are in the exact same boat as Jones, where they were fairly heavily targeted but didn't really turn it into anything. Tavon Austin had a ton of targets, was bad.
Oof, yeah.
Michael Crabtree had 9 targets. Fuller had 11. Like, this is just kind of what you get in this price range. So
of all those guys, I would take Jones over that whole group. Just because I think the team is better than a lot of the other guys we mentioned, and I think that I just would take him over.
I like his role. I mean, he seems to be the way, like, they're going to use him like a wide receiver one, the guy who they want to put big plays up with, and he's going to convert a lot of those given his skill set and given their desires. And Stafford can throw the long ball. You know, he made a living off doing that with Calvin Johnson. The thing is, Jones is not Calvin Johnson, so who knows if that's actually going to work out. But yeah, I think he's still a value. He'll be more expensive by the end of the season, so if you want to take it from a value perspective, you might be running out of time to play him.
Worth noting that even if you had him at wide receiver 1 or 2, Tennessee last year, 27th in the league in DVOA against the wide receiver 1, 31st against wide receiver 2. So no matter which way you kind of take that, assuming there haven't been too many changes on the defensive side of the ball, that he's probably in a good – the Lions in general are just in a good spot here. Tennessee's just not a very good defense. On the Tennessee side of the ball, Tajay Sharp is a guy who was another targeted guy going into week 1. We thought he was going to be season targets going into week 1. It does materialize that way. And if he ends up being sort of Mariota's go-to guy – Is the price on Sharp, on at least on DraftKings, where I think he really didn't climb at all, right? He's $4,100 still on DraftKings. Can you get behind him in a game where they might be playing from behind?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, he's still very cheap. He is, let's see, yeah, $4,100 you said. So 76 receiving yards, tons of snaps, 7 receptions, lots of targets. Yeah, he seems to be a tremendously good play. 17% of his team's total overall targets, which you really like to see from a rookie. That number tends to move up rather than down as the season goes if that rookie's had success. So, yeah, he might be another guy who we're looking at his cheapest price of the season right now.
Yeah, I have no problem playing him, even on cash on DraftKings, if you think the volume is there. And especially, like we said, if the game script goes the way where Tennessee's going to be playing from behind and they need to force him the ball, is there anyone else on the Tennessee side of things that you can sort of – that you see as – worth it here, or are we just kind of moving on?
Yeah, I think we're kind of moving on. I mean, there's just not really. I mean, Mariota and Sharp might be one of those kind of cute offbeat stack things that you wind up doing, but you're not really thrilled. And the running back positions is total stay away with Murray, Henry, and whoever else they're going to throw out there.
Probably the most highly targeted game on the whole day, or really the whole week, is the Giants and Saints. Saints go into New York, and they're slight dogs, but the game has a huge total. It started at 52. It's up to 53.5 right now.
Yeah.
So the over-under climbing as we speak. Let's start on the Giants side of the ball, and I mean, there's almost too much to talk about here, but where are we looking for the Giants? Who do you see is kind of the chalkier cash game plays here, and maybe some tournament guys?
Well, I think it's interesting because there's all at once a lot of exciting plays from this game, and for me, not that much to talk about. I mean, we talked about, I think yesterday, when we were just doing our overall picks article, why we like Eli and Odell Beckham in particular, just because the Cowboys played such a slow pace last week. And both of them stand to really rebound significantly if their plays increase by 20% in this game, which is roughly what we're projecting for, 20 or 25% snap increase for everyone. So just given that and the fact that they've shown like real pedigree and being able to connect even in not so good matchups in the past means that when they get like the best overall matchup, they're both going to be top plays. So they're both going to be relatively chalkish plays. The dilemma for most people, I think, is going to be picking between Breeze and Manning. I mean, Breeze was so good last week, and that's really going to stick in people's minds. Manning was not so good. And so I think Breeze will be the more owned of the two. But the savings you get on Manning make him, I think, more interesting for me, just because the pricing, generally speaking, going into this week seems pretty fair. Like, we're not going to really – there's no – at least as of Friday, there's not any big running back news that's giving us – pause to where we're going to just plug a guy in for 5,000 or whatever on FanDuel. So I think that, you know, from that perspective, saving the 1,000 on Manning really, really makes sense. But yeah, both those guys are just kind of chalk to me, right? I mean, is there much more to say about them?
Well, the only reason Beckham to me isn't, there's a couple reasons they're not chalk. And it's really because of what you mentioned, Breeze. And I think there's some Cam love out there. We'll get to him in a little bit. But the reason you like Manning and I agree with you, is the price being 10 to 15% less than those other two guys. Is the pricing's pretty tight across the board this week. You need to get every piece of savings you can. There are just really not many punt plays. And which also the problem is with Beckham. I think the other question is Beckham versus Brown, right? So I think that my goals would be for this week. I think Beckham, if I were to guess now, Beckham is more owned than Brown, but it's not by a landslide. And I think that's probably correct, all things considered. I think if I were to make my lineups right now for cash, and I usually don't do this, but I would probably run something along the lines of the first 10 to 20 optimal lineups we have in our system right now. And that gives a sampling of both of those receipts. It never pairs them together, which is going to be very difficult to do. To roster that much money together is not impossible, but you're going to really need to sacrifice somewhere else, maybe two places, to be able to do that. And I just not sure if that's correct. But if you play cash games and you roster more than one lineup, like I do, or like we do, I think playing the top 20 or so lineups that are all very, very similar, with some slight changes at running back and some slight changes between Brown and Beckham, sort of toggling between the two, that would be my strategy going in right now.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. And then I think actually the more discussion to be had in this game is going to be around Rashad Jennings. I think he's a guy that we're a little higher on than a lot of people are this week, and I'd like to go ahead and make a case for him right now. So the first thing is that, you know, we've seen Jennings be the guy in New York in the past and been very successful in that role. Now, it obviously didn't fully come to fruition in week one, but again, the Giants played something like, I don't know, 20%, 15% fewer snaps than they will going forward. Now, he only was out there for 32 snaps last week, and he might not even be the third down back, but given that he ran the ball 18 times on 32 snaps, it seems like that's what the Giants intend to do with him when he's out there. He's still super, super cheap, and if you think this game's going to have 20% more plays for the Giants this week, and you sort of just round everything up, and you think that the Giants are really going to be in the highest scoring game of the week, very easy to see Jennings having a big piece of that pie. So at 6,300, getting a clear running back one at 6,300 on FanDuel in the game with the highest total is going to mean that guy's going to be a heavy consider for us.
Yeah, he falls into a group of about four running backs that we have projected almost just within, you know, decimal points of each other. It's Woodhead, Jennings, Matthews, and Yeldon. Yep. And they kind of, for me, all fall into that category. Like I said with Brown, like I'd be totally fine just sort of swapping around my ownership percentages of them on the main mm-hmm. slate. It gets a little bit different when you get into like the 4 o'clock game. So if you feel like, you know, you want to have exposure to one or the other, it kind of depends because you can grab at least one of those guys in the 4 o'clock. But yeah, Jennings kind of falls into that same category with me where I'm having a little trouble distinguishing between that group for a variety of reasons.
Well, yeah, and I think it's interesting because if Jennings swapped matchups with any of these other guys,
oh, right.
I mean, the other guys are playing against each other. What a big showdown, by the way. TJ Yeldon versus Danny Woodhead.
Dun, dun, dun.
Tell my grandkids about that one. Bum, 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 bum. Yeah, but I think if he swapped matchups with either of those guys, you would clearly play either of them over Jennings in sure. this format. Like, I think he's got less of a role that I'm excited about and that he just doesn't catch balls out of the backfield, or at least he didn't in week one. So from that perspective, I don't like him, but this is just a dream situation, you know, like
yep.
this game is projected for a full touchdowns, more points than the Jacksonville San Diego game. So that's really going to move him up. That being said, I think it's close enough to where on DraftKings, where you get that extra half a point per reception and the prices are, I don't even remember what Jennings' price on DraftKings is, but I do like, oh yeah, he's more expensive. So he's 1,000 more than Yeldon and 400 more than Woodhead on DraftKings. I'd rather have Yeldon or Woodhead on DraftKings than Jennings.
Well, this is it's a nice week for this because our DraftKings and FanDuel lineups, at least for the main slate, look just different enough where you can sort mm-hmm. of grab the value that you have on each one over the other. So, I'm with you. I don't know. The game script seems to really follow it, but the lack of receiving and just the fact that he's not the every down guy just has me just a little bit worried. But these other guys have question marks as well. What about the Saints side of the ball?
Yeah, the Saints are interesting. I mean, they're going to be really, really highly played this week just because they exploded for so many points. And it was the guys that you kind of recognized that did all the scoring last week. So Cooks and Snead are really – Cooks and Snead, that sounds like a – I don't know, an odds and ends shop or something like that. But, I kind of like it. So yeah, Cooks and Snead, they're both just fantastic week one performances. My enthusiasm there is less than I think a lot of people's for a couple of reasons. Now, first of all, we were really high on Snead going into week one. I think we had projected, if not that the top among all industry analysts, just because he is so much more heavily targeted when he's in the starting lineup. And obviously that bore out in week one. I mean, 9 targets is terrific for a guy in the wide receiver 2 slot. Now, that being said, combined, Snead and Cooks just had 18 targets. They converted that into 15 receptions and 315 yards. Now, if you let that sink in for a second, that is better than 16 yards per target, to say nothing of catches. So unless you think Snead is going to pull in 100% of his reception or targets this season or turn them into receptions, or if you think Brandon Cooks is going to average 24 yards a catch, then I think you at least need to take a deep breath here and look a little bit deeper. And Cooks, I mean, he had the one huge 98-yard reception. And after that, it was 5 receptions for, you know, 50 yards or whatever. So I don't think that I'm not going to play Cooks this week. I think he's going to be overowned, and I'm not going to trust the deep ball there, given that the prices have climbed a bit. Snead to me remains interesting. I think the sites kind of see him as, you know, potentially a guy who got a little bit lucky in week one. And while that's definitely true, he probably didn't get as lucky as it appears he did, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I don't know that I love either of them. You're not going to really get much separation. And obviously, they could both just completely go off. Vegas is projecting this is the highest overall total. So, you know, please don't just avoid these guys at all costs or anything like that. It's just that, again, like in the what are you getting away with category by playing these guys, I don't know that you're getting away with much by playing them in a big tournament. Basically, by playing them in a big tournament, you're saying, I think these guys are, they should be the chalk plays because they're the best. But like on DraftKings, Cooks is 8,000. Like that's completely out of bounds for me, right?
No, I think I'm with you. I think we're out of the value zone with them, especially with Snead. The price just climbed way too much. With the other weapons,
well, Snead, Snead's 5,800 on DraftKings. I find that to be pretty reasonable. Cooks at 8,000 or Cooks at 8,400 on FanDuel? No way. You're talking about, like we talked about, if you can save 1,000, like you're going to take Breeze and Cooks over Eli and Odell Beckham. That's basically the same price. That seems insane to me.
No, I'm with you. It's not that I think Snead's a bad play. He just, with that price climb to 58, just enters the realm of just like other guys that are also decent, you know? So like he ends up like in that Marvin Jones category, 58 for Snead, 55 for Jones. Sort of just like, I mean, you know, Kelvin Benjamin's 700 more, but I would call it sort of in the same range.
I think it's time for no halftime challenge. You like Marvin Jones better straight up than Willie Snead this week, do you think?
No, I don't, but I'll go with it because you did a great lead in with no halftime. So I will.
So no halftime. Nohalftime.com is one of our favorite sponsors. They run a really cool business over there where basically what they do is they offer you the ability to make one-on-one daily fantasy challenges. So, you know, the classic bar situation where you're out with your friends and one guy's going off about how great Odell Beckham is and you love Antonio Brown. You can say, hey man, you want to put your money where your mouth is? Let's open up the app and issue a challenge. Now, you don't only have to challenge your friends. You can issue challenges just out into the ether, especially if you think certain guys are going to be under-owned this week. If you think people are too high on Cooks, for instance, maybe you just throw out challenges like Odell Beckham against Brandon Cooks and see if there's a Saints homer out there who will take it. So you can surf their app for challenges. You can issue challenges yourself. And it's really super easy, you know, really intuitive interface, great app. They also have a promo code for our users. So that's DFSR25. They will match up to $25 on 100% of your initial buy-in. So you can head to nohalftime.com, use the app, and use promo code DFSR25 to get a little bonus. So for week one, this is a decision people are really going to make, right? I mean, the difference between Snead and Jones, I mean, it seems close to me just because that price is so close, but...
I'll give you another one. Here, forget them, because if you like the Snead side, what about Snead versus Doug Baldwin? Baldwin 800, yeah, Baldwin 800 more on DraftKings.
I'll take Doug Baldwin. I think that Baldwin remains underrated. I mean, he continues to see a huge amount of targets in Seattle. I'm sure we'll get to that game in a little bit, but no, I like the Doug Baldwin side of that. How about you?
Yeah, I probably would have taken the Baldwin side too. So, I mean,
send shop is out into the world then.
We'll say it again.
I guess we'll have to just send our challenges out into the world and see if anyone will.
Well, this is why I love it, because you can just use the system to inform you about, like, you know, plays that are, you know, 4 to 5 points higher, but people might see them as the same. Like, I guarantee people see Snead as better than Baldwin right now. Like, if you were to just poll the random, like, even DFS player and be like, who'd you rather have coming off week one, Willie Snead or Doug Baldwin? 75% of the people would say Snead, because that game is fresh in their minds and Baldwin was just kind of a guy, right? And so this is where I love kind of throwing out challenges like that. Because I don't know, your perception can get skewed pretty quickly, just based on, I don't know, short term results. In terms of the other Saints guys, you know, we have Colby Fleener. We saw what Witten did against the Giants last week from the tight end position. They were able to really open up stuff with him. Or Mark Ingram. Does any of these other guys jump out to you as possible value plays? Just because, like we said, the game total is so much higher than most other games I'm going here.
Well, I'm never going to play Colby Fleener unless something dramatically changes there. You know, people were really high on him for week one. He just did nothing. And in a game where the Saints had like 400 whatever yards passing. So I just don't see any reason at all to play him. Ingram remains interesting to me in that, you know, the Saints, like, he's clearly the number one running back, but it's kind of weird that they were up by a lot and he still only got 12 carries, right? So I don't know. I was a lot more excited about Ingram going into week one than I feel now. Maybe that's unfair, but that's kind of where my head's at right now.
No, I think I'm with you. This game is going to be one of the more heavily owned games. It'll be interesting to see how our system sort of parses things out. A note just came in while we were talking. We'll get to it in the next game. Or in a couple games from now. Carolina versus San Francisco. Carolina is by far the biggest favorite of the day. -13.5 right now against the San Francisco team. Actually coming off a win against LA, though it's hard to call LA a team at this point. So I'm not sure what we can learn from that. We talked like a bunch about Cam on our last podcast. So I'm not sure we need to do as deep a dive for Cam here, because you can go back and listen to a lot of our thoughts on our Thursday podcast where we broke down all of our value plays. But he is a guy that's coming really high in our system right now because, for a lot of reasons, one, the Niners just aren't a great defense. He's Cam. He has a ton of safety because of his legs. Are we still considering him? I mean, we mentioned Manning before as a cash game play. Can we still really heavily consider Cam for cash games?
I think so. I mean, I think especially on DraftKings where – so on FanDuel, I think Eli is probably too cheap to get away from, right? I mean, he's like a full thousand, a full tier below those other guys, and spending up that thousand elsewhere really makes a big difference for you. On DraftKings, though, they're all kind of clustered around the same price point, and I think Breeze is actually the most expensive of that group there, and that starts to really make me have a harder look at Cam. You know, again, we dove into the really deep dive on him, but there's indicators that he just continues to get the same usage in blowouts that he does. Although with a big money line, I'm a little concerned that that might be an erratic performance waiting to happen.
Yeah, no, I love the price separation that you get on DraftKings. We talked about why it's good to play multiple, you know, a couple different sites. You naturally get good value here. This is exactly what I'm going to do with Cam. He'll be my cash game play on DraftKings almost for sure for the main slate.
Yeah, you're ready. You're just locking him in.
Yeah, I think so because I only really like those three quarterbacks at the top: Eli, Breeze, and Cam. And he is, you know, like you said, I'm not going to pay more for Breeze, especially on the road as a dog. I just don't think the price is just too high. And then Manning and Cam's floor, I think, is just higher than Manning simply because of his legs. And if he's going to be able to, you know, grab a rushing touchdown, which he does, like they use him in the red zone so often. And, you know, he'll get out six, if he can get out and run six, seven times in this one, even with a lead. Yeah, I think I would much rather just pay an extra $300 more. You don't lose anything else from the rest of your lineup, and I think you have a higher implied floor for Cam than you do for Eli. So I like being able to sort of roster them both naturally on different sites.
Well, see, and I was going to go in a different direction because I think so. If you X Cam out in our thing, if you exclude him from your results, then you can actually it's something you actually never see. So if Cam weren't playing this week, the top four lineups have three different quarterbacks in them,
right,
which means that they're all separated just by a hair's breadth, basically. So if there's any line movement, if there's even like little tweaks made to the system, you could see guys like Breeze and Manning move up into that Cam range. And for me, it feels like a week where, and we're not talking about giving up a few points of equity. We're talking there is a lineup with four different quarterbacks: Manning, Breeze, Cam Newton, and Phil Rivers. Just because he's cheap, sorry. Right. Don't yell at me through your podcast.
Well, Mariota shows up there too. I mean, so this you just you,
that's
you
what get, I mean. So like you can really get the indicator for me there is that like the value on Cam isn't such that you just need to jam him in if you're worried about the blowout or the game script potential. So like for me, I think much rather even just hedge across a bunch of quarterbacks on DraftKings and kind of mix and match some of the other pieces. Like, for instance, there's a lineup with Breeze, D'Angelo Williams, and TJ Yeldon that I really like. And that's within, you know, a half a point of our top overall lineup. So I might wind up hedging there as well. But yeah, Newton enters that hedge discussion a lot more. Whereas on FanDuel, I'm locked into Eli on FanDuel. I'm not locked into Newton on DraftKings, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think I'm probably a little bit more bullish on Newton here just because the other things just don't pass the sniff test for me going down the line as much. And that's just more of my own personal,
This lineup, and you know, hopefully this is fun for the user, but Breeze, D'Angelo, TJ Yeldon, Baldwin, Benjamin, Jones Jr., Witten, Tajay Sharp, Patriots. That seems strong. I really
yeah, the
like
weird
that.
Thing is, the funny thing is that it has, it's so weird about pricing. I mean, again, this has to be the most boring thing ever for someone to listen to. But the weird thing about,
if you're listening to this podcast, you're a DFS geek. So
the weird thing, the weird thing about that is where you X Cam out and you pay more for Breeze and then end up paying more for D'Angelo as well, right? Like, so D'Angelo Williams isn't in that lineup with Cam, even though that he's 300 less. I find that interesting. I'm going to look into more
about it. That's just why you need an optimizer. If you're doing this by hand, you probably already lost. So even if you don't use our optimizer, just like plug your projections into one of those optimizers where you can make lineups for free and do something, because if you're just using guesswork, you're wasting your time. So.
What about like guys like, okay, so the other couple guys that are probably interesting here from the Carolina side of the ball, if you think the game is going to be a blowout, does Jonathan Stewart kind of enter the conversation for you on his volume that he could get if they were winning by a lot and want to run the clock out? And also Kelvin Benjamin sort of starts emerging as another one of those maybe high volume target guys that we expected him to be coming off that week one game in Denver.
Nah, Stewart's just a guy for me. Like I'm not, I don't know. There's not really a lot to get excited about. Sure, he could put up volume, but we saw a lot. I mean, we went game by game through all those games last season, and there were a lot of games where just Newton wind up getting 10 carries and Stewart still had like 15 or whatever. I mean, he did have a few where he put up a lot, but the really run heavy quarterback there really eats away a lot of Stewart's equity. And they also have reasonable short passing options that they like Greg Olsen. So I don't know. I'm not interested in him at all, really. Likewise for Olsen, I think we probably just need to see a little bit more before we're willing to pay up at the tight end position this season. Like Olsen strikes me as just essentially the same thing as Jason Witten, but you get the pleasure of spending 70 or 1700 more for him on FanDuel. So I just don't see the point there really. And Benjamin is, I think, the really interesting guy for this game because he's a guy we were pretty high on going into week one, and he wound up doing exactly what he did in the past, which that made us like him, which is be the clear number one wide receiver and be good downfield. That said, this is like kind of the worst possible matchup for a guy who gets his points that way. Like, I think my suspicion is that Benjamin kind of has an off week here, and we wind up really loving him next week. Like, if that, I don't know if that makes any sense at all, but I think that might be the way it winds up going here. Although I wouldn't be surprised if just I wind up deciding that the value is great enough that I just wind up playing him anyway.
No, I think I'm with you. The Carolina game is weird. I always get a little bit worried when we're talking about blowout situations like this. I don't think we really have much to discuss on in terms of the Niners side of the ball, do we? Is there anything that we...
No.
Yeah, okay. I mean, you can also consider... along those lines, you could probably also consider the Panthers' defense here if you want to spend up a little more for a defense. The Niners really aren't expected to do anything.
Jeremy Curley was kind of good last week. I mean, there's no one here. No. You can't do it.
No, thanks. Moving into the 4 o'clock games, Seattle heads to L.A. We saw what L.A., quote-unquote, did last week. Saying did implies that anything happened for them. It didn't. So Seattle goes into L.A. as -7 favorites. Wilson, I guess, was a little banged up during the week, though. He's saying he's a full go now. Rawls appears that he's going to be the number one running back again. He'll be the starter this week, though. I'm a little concerned about what kind of volume they sort of end up, you know, parsing out between him and Michael. What do you like from the Seattle side of things?
Well, the main guy I like from Seattle continues to be Doug Baldwin. He's the guy that we talked about going into last week. And even in a really low-scoring game, I mean, this game had – Seattle scored 12 points in this game, so maybe that's more – you know, that's probably not a good thing for Baldwin or Wilson or any of these other guys. But that being said, you still love the 11 targets and the 9 receptions. And, yeah, I mean, we've pointed at some other guys and said, like A.J. Green, we talked about how the 12 receptions on 13 targets looked pretty lucky. And while for Baldwin, you probably can't pencil him in for 9 catches every time he gets 11 targets. He was one of the top guys. I think he was the top overall receiver in terms of converting targets into receptions out of the top 40 last season, converting 75% of his targets into catches. And that's, you know, specifically due to how Seattle uses him. They just like to give him those short underneath routes. They like to use him in the possession game, moving the chains, and especially in the red zone. So those are all things I like out of a guy who's still really, really affordable. On DraftKings in particular, you know, shoring up those high single-digit receptions in a given week is really, really strong. And especially if Wilson's banged up, it stands to reason that he'll just go with what's comfortable and what works. And with the uncertain running back situation as well, I suspect Baldwin will have another big week here.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm uncertain about the running backs. I really only like Baldwin here. What about the Rams side? Or are we just kind of considering the Seattle defense and moving on?
That's a pass. I mean, I don't know. Definitely the Seattle defense. I mean, the Rams are projected for like 15 points this week. So if you think that's going to happen, they'll be playing from behind and putting the ball in the not so capable hands of Case Keenum. I think that, you know, it could be an absolute disaster. Obviously, you can't play Todd Gurley here. He's probably overpriced in general based on how bad this offense is, and particularly in a bad matchup with Seattle. So maybe if you're one of those season-long players, you like Gurley as like a buy-low candidate after this terrible week that's coming up here.
If you're season-long, you're standing on the edge of the cliff with Todd Gurley because it doesn't look like it's going to get any better for him.
No, it could, though. I would buy low on Gurley, though, after this week's going to be bad, and then I'd buy low on him because, it'd be tough for him to be that bad based on how good he was last year. So.
Sure seems like it. In the next game we have is the Bucs head to Arizona. Arizona loses, unbelievably, sort of, to the Patriots last week, though they come in here -7, implied for about 28-plus points going in. Still a high-powered offense. What do you like from the Arizona side of the ball? And this game actually has a decent over 50 over-under as of right now. That's one of the higher overall in the slate. Is this a game you are looking at maybe more on the 4 o'clock side of things, or can we consider some guys for the main slate?
No, yeah, I think there's going to be some controversial plays for the main slate. One guy that, you know, that kind of the industry writ large is higher on than we are is David Johnson. I think they, you know, people see him as a huge upside guy who, you know, high volume player, obviously huge talent, can definitely break off the big play. We just don't see him as that safe of a play just because, you know, Arizona does move the ball around a lot. And while Johnson can go off big for game to game, he's also a guy that really runs the risk. He's kind of like, you know, a poor man's Barry Sanders in some ways, where, yeah, Sanders could have transcendent games, and he was good enough to where you could sort of count on him for a big run every game, but Johnson's not really that guy. I mean, he can definitely go out there and get you 40 or 50 rushing yards in a given game, and that's just not really where you want to be in the top tier of prices. Like, if you're going to spend as much on him as you could on Antonio Brown or something, it's just a non-discussion for me. And again, like, it's very – one of the more interesting things about playing DFS football is how different – guys at different prices perform across different positions. So like you hear a $5,900 wide receiver and you're basically trying to catch lightning in a bottle with a wide receiver three. But for $5,900 at running back, you can often get a guy who's moving into a new role who is probably going to be 80% of what a starter would be. At wide receiver, that's simply not the case. And so you're going to pay up for Johnson at $9,000 means you're going to get one of those guys in the $5,900 to $6,500 range at running back, or go down on quarterback, and it's just frankly not worth it. Although I know others disagree. Where would you jump in on that, yeah, in those camps?
Yeah, no, I'm totally with you. I think we looked pretty hard at David Johnson's carries and touches going into this week. We're probably even a little higher than we should be even on him, just because of maybe some game script stuff. And maybe the idea that they want to get him a little bit more involved here. And even then, it's just not really something that's happening for me. Tampa Bay was really good against the run last year, 9th overall in DVOA. It just doesn't strike me as the place I want to spend up. He's a great play. Clearly, he's a tournament play for me, for sure, because there is that kind of upside there for him. I just don't see...
Yeah, he's just not a build-around guy for cash games.
Definitely not for me. Not with all the other running back value there.
But I think in the same direction, in... perhaps not as controversial, but a guy we really like going in this week is Larry Fitzgerald. I talked about him quite a bit on yesterday's podcast, so I won't go too deep into it right now, but he, you know, the 10 targets leading the team, really what you'd like to see. I think it speaks to what Arizona hopes to do. One of the really nice things about, you know, these teams that played close games in week one is I think we learn a lot more about what they actually hope to do from week to week. You know, it's not like teams, like, it's really hard to know, for instance, what San Francisco wants to do, because they were in probably what is going to amount to their only blowout of the season, right? So who knows what's going to happen? Like, they could be playing from behind and Torrey Smith could be a great play, but that's not the case here with the Cardinals. Close game. Fitzgerald was highly targeted. He is their possession guy. He's clearly their guy in the red zone based on those skills. So I think he's a terrific play for week one and probably underrated across the industry right now.
Yeah, I think so too, especially in DraftKings where you need to be able to grab some of that volume, those volume targets to get the 1 point PPR. He comes into that sort of value range for me still in the 6,000s. I think you can get away this week, maybe even on DraftKings with just not... You can maybe even get away with just not rostering one of those big boys, because there are some pretty sick double-digit target upside guys in the lower ranges. It's going to feel really weird doing it.
We just talked about one in Baldwin, and I think Fitzgerald's definitely in that camp as well.
What about Tampa Bay? They head in. Arizona's defense has historically been pretty good. Do you think you can really get a piece of anybody in here going? I think I read a note that said Peterson was not going to follow around. Mike Evans in this one, is he a guy that you can target wide receiver one, or you think they look off of, like, more Vincent Jackson's way? Really anything here for you?
Not especially. I mean, Mike Evans is a guy that's oftentimes a consideration for big tournaments, but again, he's not in the same tier as any of those other wide receiver ones for me, other than the fact that he just does have the upside to go out and do it in a given week. So I guess you can think about him for big tournaments if the money lines up. Vincent Jackson, not really. I mean, he's a guy that is always seems, I think, more intriguing than he actually should be, because he does get targets or will have high target games, but he's just kind of old now, and a lot would have to go right for him to wind up outperforming other guys in similar price ranges that also get as many targets as him. So, yeah, I think I'll just pass there.
Yeah, I think I'm with you. There's just really nothing for me to get too crazy about. The next game on the list is Denver. Indianapolis goes to Denver. We talked a lot about C.J. Anderson yesterday. We see C.J. Anderson as sort of a sneaky, almost cash game play for us, even on the main slate, just considering his volume. Definitely on the 4 o'clock slate. That's why I like playing a bunch of different time ones, because you can just naturally get some of these guys in, and I'm not sure he's a big name for a lot of other people. So if you want to hear some of our C.J. Anderson thoughts, head back to the last podcast. We think he's a really, really strong play. After him in this game, is the defensive matchup just too tough for the Colts here, where you really can't consider them, or is there just something else I'm missing here?
Yeah, I don't think this is the week to dive in on the Colts. You know, again, their big tournament targets here are going to be guys like Dante Moncrief. T.Y. Hilton's a guy who could really, he's always a threat to put up that Adrian Greenish week from last week where, you know, the targets are often there, but he's such a low conversion guy that when he does actually convert a lot, you can see a lot of big catches and touchdowns and so on. Against Broncos defense, you're not going to play anyone in a cash game. The Broncos, I think, are more interesting to me. So what do you make of this Vegas line? I mean, Vegas thinks the implied total here is the Broncos scoring 26.5, and that number's come up from the open by one whole point. So what do you think people are seeing that I'm not seeing?
The Colts defense is terrible, is what they're seeing, I think. The Colts defense is so bad, and that even a team So, like, Denver was adequate last week against what presumably is a pretty good defense in the Panthers, though. I mean, they had some offseason changes, so it's always a little tough to tell. But the Colts defense is, like, not historically bad, but they're so bad. And I don't know. I think that's more what people are saying, that they think they're just going to really anybody can move the ball on Indianapolis. And I think that's why it's come up. I don't really think it actually has much to do with Denver as much as it has to do with just how rough that defense is.
Yeah, I mean, I guess 26.5 is only 5.5 more than they scored against Carolina, theoretically, again, a much better defense. So maybe it's not out of bounds, but I guess all that really means to me is that I love C.J. Anderson even more than I did before, because I just don't see Trevor Siemian being the one who moved the chains out there. And I think, unfortunately, Demaryius Thomas and Emmanuel Sanders are still priced out for me until, you know, more realistic prices are put in place based on their new quarterback situation here. So,
yeah, I mean, Detroit,
I do love C.J. Anderson in this matchup, but probably no one else.
Detroit put up 40 against Indianapolis in Indy last week. So, I don't know.
It seems like a lot.
Right. I think that's really where you've seen that line movement. Let's go on to the next game. It's Falcons at the Raiders. Falcons have shown that they're not really sure what they're – or are happy to just sort of committee the running back situation. Raiders coming off a day where they were able to put up some points against the Saints, have some interesting things here. What are you looking in this game?
Yeah, there are a lot of interesting plays from this game. You know, again, we're probably outside of the cash game consideration here, but I think that there's definitely guys to consider. I mean, on any given week, you're always going to consider Julio Jones. I do think that this week, given that you have – essentially a cluster of Beckham, Jones, and Brown all at the top, and much better reasons to play Brown and Beckham. I think Jones is kind of the odd man out. Actually, I think that makes him a great big tournament play. I think after a pretty disappointing week one, especially where people were just having nervous breakdowns on Twitter about, is he on the field? What's going on? No targets. My season's on the line. I picked this guy second overall. Like, people were really panicking, and I think they weren't, you know, that relieved by his pretty underwhelming line at the end, even though he snuck the touchdown in there. So I could definitely see him being underowned in big tournaments because he's definitely one of those guys with a upside to have the biggest overall week in a given week. That said, we did see what Brandon Cooks and Willie Snead did against Oakland last week, so this could absolutely be that week. I still think, though, with like the little injury things, I think you can just do a little bit safer. So I will not personally play him in my cash games. That said, I think Mohamed Sanu, too, is a pretty interesting guy for big tournaments as well. Like, I think that actually both sides of the ball here, going a quarterback and two receiver stack, could be a really interesting way to harness a lot of big upside without taking on, you know, the inordinate risk of playing just a team that's bad, right? Like Mariota and Tajay Sharp or something. Like getting Ryan Jones and Sanu might be a winning combo.
Yeah, no, and the Saints proved last week you still can throw on the Raiders. I know that the Saints offense is better than the Rams, but the Rams just do have a couple of those weapons in there. I'm actually surprised the line's as low as it is. The spreads come down a little bit in favor of the Falcons, but the implied line movement hasn't moved, or the implied totals haven't really moved with that line.
It's still 49 is pretty reasonable. I mean, that's, you know, in the top few percent of the week, right? It's like, or at the top half. Now, I guess there's a lot of really high totals.
Yeah, no, there's some.
This would have been one of the higher ones for last week.
The Jaguars go into San Diego this week. San Diego loses Keenan Allen. The receiving core is a little bit in flux now because you're just not exactly sure who's going to get the targets. We were saying that the Rivers historically has been a worse quarterback when Allen isn't on the field. Do you see the targets solidifying in one particular guy's direction? Do you see them sort of like still spreading out the ball a little bit? I know that like Rivers came out this week and was talking up Tyrell Williams, who people are going to get on. I always get worried about like this QB coach speak about like talking a guy up about how good he is when we really haven't seen anything from him. What do you think about the San Diego receiving core, Phillips in general, or the running backs?
Yeah, so I think that the guy a lot of people are on this week, rightfully so, is Danny Woodhead. Woodhead was essentially the wide receiver one in San Diego at the end of last season. I mean, he was getting, you know, he ended the season in back-to-back 10-target games. He averaged better than 6 targets a game after Allen went down, and that includes one game where he only had 2 when they just lost 33-3 against Kansas City, rather. So I think that Woodhead is just a terrific play. DraftKings in particular, he seems especially safe because, again, you compare him with a guy like Rashad Jennings. Woodhead essentially starts the game with 5 points, being 5 points ahead of Rashad Jennings just based on the catches. So I think that he's just a terrific play. I could see him being a chalk play. I could see him being in GPP winning lineups as well, just because the potential for like the week that Spencer Ware had last week, I think the potential is there for Woodhead. Now, that being said, Melvin Gordon also out-carried Woodhead last week. Now, a lot of that was because San Diego was so far ahead and they were just trying to run the clock down. And I'm sure they perceive just straight carries is a little safer than the short passes that Woodhead is more known for. But I do think in a game that probably will just have a more normal game script this week. I mean, yeah, San Diego is still favored and Jacksonville is not great, but San Diego is not really built to blow teams out. So I suspect Woodhead will still have quite a good week. And I'm not interested in Melvin Gordon.
It's funny about Woodhead. Right now, as of right now, he's coming into our optimal lineups from both sites. My big concern with him is the touchdowns. Now, he makes up a lot of that with the receptions, and in some way the receptions are safer, so I'm not willing to just like say it's not just binary. He doesn't score touchdowns, so therefore I don't want to play him. The problem is he's just not a favorite. Like he does not get any looks in the red zone. Melvin Gordon is the goal line guy. The only way he scores touchdowns is to just get like last week, just get a 21-yard reception and get in. So that's just not something that is going to happen quite a lot. But like you said, the receptions sort of make up for so much of it. I'm really on the fence with him. Not on DraftKings. I'm fine with it there. Like I think his at 60 or whatever he is, 6,300 or something. No, 50. Yeah, sorry, 5,200. I shouldn't have just looked it up before I started talking. I think I'm just totally fine with it there. It's the FanDuel one that I'm a little worried about, and he falls into that, you know, Rashad Jennings, Ryan Matthews, we're going to get to in a second, T.J. Yeldon, who is also in this game. They're all priced in the same range with varying levels of volume, and that is where I'm just sort of scratching my head about. But I like Woodhead. It's just, that's my biggest concern.
No, I think that's all very fair. I think the red zone point is a really good one. Generally speaking, I mean, it's kind of interesting because like Rashad Jennings is probably the definitive goal line back in New York, and Woodhead is definitively not the goal line back on his team, and the receptions are so disparate. So it's like if you kind of take Woodhead's receptions as a touchdown that you sort of already know you're getting, then that's why I perceive him as a little bit safer. But I can definitely hear the argument that his upside is certainly limited by the fact that if a lot of possessions end down at the 3 to 5 yard line, that's going to really hurt him.
So, right, he's done.
I like that point.
T.J. Yeldon's a guy that the system likes. Chris Ivory, yeah. This is the note that came in a little bit ago. Chris Ivory is definitively out again this week, which we pretty much considered or assumed was going to happen. Yeldon gets a ton of looks last week. He stinks, but he gets a ton of looks. So like 21 carries for 39 yards is about as bad as you can do when they just keep handing you the ball over and over again. That being said, they're probably going to keep handing him the ball over and over again because he is their only guy. We saw that Kansas City, you know, Spencer Ware was able to do some stuff out of the backfield against San Diego last week. Our system's really high on Yeldon. They're not totally dogs like you would expect Jacksonville to be. Like they're still projected for, you know, more than 22 points this week, which speaks probably more about the San Diego defense really than anything else. Is Yeldon considered, can we consider him a cash game play here?
I think you can. It's always tough to take a guy who's had 1.9 yards per carry from the previous week, if only because it seems to make his role seem less secure. I do think that in this situation with Ivory being ruled out, Yeldon is about as secure as one can be as the lead running back on a bad team that has done badly in the past.
Right.
So there's plenty of disclaimers for you there. But I think that given the run volume against Green Bay in a bad matchup, the fact that they just kept handing him the ball, they didn't even try anything else really. And the fact that he caught 4 balls out of the backfield means that he's a 3-down back in what amounts to what should be a fairly good matchup for their team, even though they're underdogs. They're going to be underdogs a lot this season. And I think he, you know, heaven forbid they should get a lead, I think his volume actually goes up there. So, yeah, I like Yeldon quite a bit this week. I think it's going to be, it might wind up feeling weird to play him over, you know, frankly, either Woodhead or Jennings, just because the game script seems to be so much worse for him than it will be for the other two. And it's going to feel weird to play him at 65 instead of just spend up another 1,000 and take D'Angelo Williams, for instance. But yeah, on DraftKings in particular, I think he's cheap enough to where the receptions and the volume will make up for the perceived lack of skill.
Yeah, and Jacksonville last week was able to sort of hang with Green Bay, not totally, but I mean, they still put up 23 points on the road there. Oh, no, excuse me, they played at home last week. So they still put up 23 points against the Packers. They're not a good offense, but really it's just the volume that we're talking about here. That Denard Robinson's not going to push up against his carries. T.J. Yeldon, you know, got 6 targets too. That's a real number. So I don't know. I'm totally fine with it. You're never going to, and the upside being, you're probably not going to see as bad of a game out of him again. Like it'd be hard to be this bad by just getting this the ball this many times. So I know that's like not, I don't subscribe to the he's due category, but it really would just be that hard to be that bad again. again, sort of on a game-to-game basis. Moving into the next game, two more to go. We have Green Bay and the Vikings. I think Sam Bradford is going to take the start here for the Vikings, though that hasn't been etched in stone. The aforementioned Packers didn't do a ton last week against Jacksonville, against what's presumed to be a very weak Jacksonville defense, and especially the secondary. Where are you feeling about Rodgers and the Rodgers? Jordy Nelson said his legs felt heavy last week. He was moving sort of slowly, which is, I don't know, I guess you can kind of consider that to be normal coming back from an injury. Where do you stand on the Packers right now going into Minnesota against the Vikings?
Yeah, I really don't like Jordy Nelson until it's always kind of stupid to say until he like comes back to his old self, because again, at that point you really haven't done anything interesting. Like if he goes for 200 yards on 15 targets, then everyone's going to be aware of him. So right. I don't know, but he's not a guy I'm probably going to wind up playing, just because when the yards per catch are down so far, and a guy coming off an injury, and a guy who does rely on that first step to kind of get separation and be effective in his team's passing game, I don't think you're going to wind up wanting to pay in the 8,000s for him for quite a while. And I think even in big tournaments, you probably have better options. Like, he's not going to be in my personal rotation. And likewise, his presence also puts downward pressure on the impact of guys like Randall Cobb too. So it's like everybody loses sort of situation there. I do think that Rodgers remains interesting. Like, I think people, industry-wide are sort of sleeping on him a little bit. The problem with Rodgers, of course, is you're still paying for it. You're not really getting any separation price-wise. You're not getting him cheap at $8,700. And that said, that could actually lead to greater separation, because I think people are going to look at him in the same price range as Breeze and Newton and even Manning to a lesser degree, and see a guy who just put up less than 200 yards passing against Jacksonville, even if he did get the two touchdowns and the running TD. A lot of people were going to feel like that was a pretty underwhelming performance, and they were nervous and whatever else if you did wind up playing him. So I could see him being a value in a big tournament, but I don't know. I don't think there's any real reason to roster him in cash games this week.
No, I'm with you. And really, the Vikings side of the ball is so much of an unknown here with the quarterback situation in flux, them coming in as an underdog. It's hard to get totally behind Peterson. The Jacksonville was intent on running the ball, even though they couldn't against Green Bay last week. So, Peterson makes for an upside play if you think just pedigree can win the day where no one else is going to play him. But sure. Other than that, it's really hard to get excited for things on the Vikings side.
Yeah, Bradford not interesting. Nah. Not really at all to me. I mean, Stephon Diggs is a guy who is going to be off a lot of radars just because, the quarterback play was so bad last week. But he did have 101 receiving yards on 7 receptions against Tennessee, and even got a carry. So he's a guy, like, no one's going to look at that points total, the 7 receptions and 103 yards, and think he's a guy you should plug in there at 6,500. But he actually does have quite a bit of upside. Young guy, he's fast. They use him in all facets of the game, 56 snaps last week. So I think he could be one of those guys who might be on a winning GPP lineup and could be in your rotation at that price point, but not a guy I'm excited about for other reasons.
The final game of the week, the Monday night game, is the Eagles going to Chicago. Chicago hangs with Houston last week. Eagles pull off, I would call it somewhat of an upset win, even though only because...
What?
Not an upset. I guess, okay, let me rephrase. It wasn't an upset. I was surprised by how well Wentz played. That's more what it was.
Yeah, sure.
I shouldn't have said upset because they were favored going in. So the Wentz plays, I would say, better than most people would have expected for a first-game rookie quarterback going in there. Langford touches the ball a lot for the Bears. We have a couple guys that are showing up in the system in terms of value plays here. Who do you like from the Monday night game as we finish off the podcast?
Well, I don't know that I really love anyone necessarily, but there are guys that I'm very intrigued by. And I should say, this is all caveated by, it all comes down to Carson Wentz. Like, if he's actually going to be good and teams aren't going to figure him out, then I think there are a lot of really interesting guys on the Eagles side of the ball. And I think even regardless, like, I'm still interested. So the two guys are going to be the Matthews brothers there, Ryan and Jordan. Ryan out of the backfield. He's always been kind of an injury guy and a guy who can just lose his carries all of a sudden. So I'm feeling a little bit wary for cash games, but basically he's essentially just a Rashad Jennings clone. He's getting all the carries. He's not getting any receptions. He didn't do a lot with his carries against Cleveland, but did get the touchdown and is the goal line back. So if you like him for that reason, then I like him too. He is a two down back though. So, take whatever he did against Cleveland with a grain of salt, that he's going to need a positive game script to continue those level of touches. But, Vegas forecasts a relatively close game here. So I could definitely see a scenario where he matches last week's touches, but I'm not over the moon about the guy.
No, I think I'm with you too. I get worried about no receptions coming from that side of the ball. On the other on the Bears side, Langford gets 17 carries last week. Doesn't do much with him. Scores a touchdown. He also a couple receptions out of the backfield. They're projected. They're going in as the favorite, which could help him game script wise. Do you like Langford at all? Do you consider him like any way safe? He's still coming very cheap on both sides.
No, not really. I mean, he's again. There's just so much competition in that price range. Like we've already mentioned, Yeldon, Matthews, Jennings, and now Langford right around that same $6,500 price range on FanDuel. I think that given what we know about those other guys and their situations, Langford is probably the least exciting of the bunch for me. I don't really see any reason to force him in over other guys until we see maybe a bigger workload or, you know, the 17 carries at Houston really just isn't anything special. Like, even if we think some of the other guys outperformed their carry expectation going forward, Langford is still the lowest of that bunch, which just leads me to not be super, super interested there.
No, I think I'm with you. Yeah.
I do think there are some interesting wide receiver plays in this game, though, before we wrap up, because I think that, and I think they highlight two specific things that I think are important. So Jordan Matthews got 20% of his team's targets in week one, was on the field for 71 snaps and punched in a touchdown. And I think that Carson Wentz, you know, I this is sort of my pet theory, but I think it's true, is that young quarterbacks hone in on one read and then, you know, really want that read to be there before they move on with their lives. Matthews, second in the league in receptions last week, or I'm sorry, targets last week with 14, was somewhat erratic in that he only hauled in seven of those. But the 14 targets is the real deal. The Eagles are still playing fast, and he's got huge upside. I mean, if you're getting 14 targets in a given game, you can easily turn that into 10 catches and, you know, really outsized gains. So for big tournaments, he's a really, really strong play for me. And then the other guy who I think is a lot more off radars is Alshon Jeffrey. You know, we were very concerned about him going into last week, and he's still kind of expensive. So, you know, you're not really doing it by playing him, but the 105 receiving yards was a welcome sign for me. He was out on the field a lot. He only had 11% of his team's targets, so they didn't look his way too much, but this game should be pretty fast paced, and he's a guy with real pedigree and a relationship with his quarterback. So another guy I'm taking a look at as well.
I think I'm all with you there, and there has been a ton to think about this week for NFL. Not as clear cut for us, I think, as it was going into week one, where I think we were pretty much honed in on where exactly sort of the lines we were going to take, where this week does not strike me to be the same level of certainty. I get a little concerned because I think a lot of the value of plays are concentrated in the 1 o'clock slate, which I don't like as much. I like when they're a little more spread out and I can naturally sort of get pieces of everybody across all different times, but that's really not the case this week. A bunch of guys, you know, one theme that we've mentioned really a lot here was there was a theme of running backs all clustered together sort of in the same value range. I think that's where a lot of our decisions are going to lie over the next 48 hours as we try to suss out the last little bits of information and see where these lineups go. And if you want to get a handle on those lineups, you want to see what they are, you go to dfsr.com, dailyfantasysportsrankings.com, where you can get a free 3-day trial to our projection system powered by Lineup Lab that's going to get you optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings NFL. You head over there, you also get MLB content and optimal lineups as well under the same umbrella. Free for 3 days and then $29.95 a month after that. Buddy, week two NFL. You and I will continue the discussion off the air. For everyone else, we'll talk to you again next week.
Yeah, man, can't wait.